Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Every year, we look forward to the Brower Youth Awards for Environmental Leadership because we get to bring some of the winners on the show, and it's one of our most inspiring shows of the year. Every year, the Earth Island Institute recognizes six environmental change leaders between the ages of 13 and 22, and the winners are doing incredible work in their communities across the country. They'll be publicly acknowledged on Tuesday, October 22nd at the Norse Theater in San Francisco. The event is free, and you can find information about getting a ticket at yourcallradio.org. On today's Your Call, we are happy to have four of the winners in studio. Jonathan Ferrer is a youth justice organizer at UpRose, which works to lessen environmental burdens in the Sunset Park neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Alex Freed is founder of the Post Landfill Action Network, an organization working to help students reduce mass waste on college campuses. He lives in Durham, New Hampshire. Hi, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. Ariel Klagsbrunn is a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. They're currently working on a campaign to get the city of St. Louis to end Peabody Energy's political power and influence in St. Louis. Hi, Ariel.
Hi, Rose.
Welcome to the show. And Chloe Maxman is she co-founded Divest Harvard, which is lobbying to get the oldest university in the country to divest from fossil fuels. And she lives in Nobleboro, Maine. Hi, Chloe. Thanks
Hi.
For coming in.
Thank you.
So you all have such amazing stories, and we'll get to those in a minute. But first off, this is the first time three of you are in the Bay Area, so welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
What was it like when you found out you won, Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, I was in the car with my mom. I was actually driving, and I was getting a phone call from a California number. It was really interesting because there's only one person that would probably be calling me, or one group, it'd be Brower. So my mom answers the phone and puts it on speaker, and Anisha and Ruth were there telling me that I actually received the award, and I had to pull over because of the excitement, and they were telling me that they would be flying me out on October 16th, which is actually my birthday.
Oh, so happy birthday.
Thank you. It was great. It was great. It was too much excitement. I had to pull over.
So talk a little bit about your story. You grew up in Southwest Brooklyn in a community surrounded by three large power plants, and you have firsthand knowledge of just how people are affected by these, especially when it comes to their health.
Yeah, definitely. Power plants, highways, waste transfer stations, these are all burdensome facilities. And it's very interesting to see the difference between lower income communities that deal with these burdens compared to, you know, like the more rich areas. And I have firsthand knowledge based on the fact that I have asthma, and a lot of my friends that live in the other neighborhoods don't have asthma. And there's key things there that you have to pay attention to, and why are these things happening?
What does it look like and feel like? Because a lot of us who live in cities don't have to deal with power plants.
Yeah, no, it's what would happen is this. I live in a residential area, but it's also a working class area. So you can be walking down a house with buildings like lined up next to each other, and one whole block would just be fenced off with just huge industrial machines. And it's just, you can see the smoke in the air. You can see and feel it.
So what was it like for you growing up there? I mean, how did you get involved in raising awareness and trying to spread the word about
this? Up until I was 14, I honestly didn't know much about environmental justice. That's what I work on at UpRose. And until I was brought to a job fair where UpRose, my organization, was at to try to collect youth to actively work with and fight for environmental justice. Before that, I didn't really know much. So I spent the summer with them. And the first summer there, that was really like a wake-up call. They pointed out all the things that you're living next to, and you don't really think that's doing any harm to people. But then you look at statistics with cancer and asthma and upper respiratory diseases, and then you realize that we're facing things that other neighborhoods aren't facing.
Is this something your family and your neighbors talked about?
No, because not a lot of people are informed about this.
How did they respond when you got so involved?
They were confused. Because, I mean, I wasn't raised with an environmental background. Mm. They thought I was just a tech geek. They didn't think I would go anywhere near that field. So it was very surprising and shocking, but now they know I'm that person that's actively involved.
Good for you. Jonathan Ferrer is a youth organizer with UpRose, a United Puerto Rican organization of Sunset Park. He also organizes the New York City Climate Justice Youth Summit, the largest youth climate convergence in the city of New York. And what about you, Ariel? You're a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, working on a campaign to get the city of St. Louis to and Peabody Energy's political power and influence in St. Louis. What was your initial reaction when you found out you won a Brower Youth Award?
I was pretty excited to have this opportunity to talk about the work that's going on in St. Louis and, you know, get a little higher profile on shining a spotlight on what we're doing in St. Louis. And, you know, we're organizing in the hometown of five coal corporations, including Peabody, which is the world's largest. So, yeah, usually people don't like us all that much. So it was nice to have some people say that we were doing good work.
And I understand you were inspired by Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, I grew up in the Boston area, and I was 14 when Hurricane Katrina happened. And, you know, I had been concerned about climate change before then, but Hurricane Katrina to me represented the coming together of climate justice and social justice issues, and really taught me a lot about racism and classism in this country. And it was, you know, I vividly remember sitting in my dad's office building and looking out the window and picturing where the water would be if something like that happened in Boston for me. And that really motivated me to, you know, fight climate change, but also to fight a lot of other social injustices happening in the country.
And how did you decide to focus on Peabody, which is the world's largest coal company?
Mm-hmm. I started fighting Peabody when I attended Washington University in St. Louis. And when I was a sophomore in college, Peabody and Arch Coal gave the school a big chunk of money to form the Consortium for Clean Coal Utilization, and then were placed on their CEOs were placed on the Board of Trustees of the university. At the same time, Peabody got tax breaks on $61 million of office renovations from the city of St. Louis to help them put in an office gym. So for us in St. Louis, that brought together climate justice advocates and economic justice advocates in saying, you know, not only why are we giving the world's largest coal company tax breaks, but you know, this is money that's supposed to go to our public schools. So right now we're involved in a lot of campaigns that are, you know, working at the intersection of climate and economic justice.
And that is Ariel Klagsbrunn. She's a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. And what about you, Alex? You're founder of the Post Landfill Action Network, an organization working to help students reduce waste on college campuses. What was your reaction when you found out you won the award?
I was also in the car, very excited. I was actually on my way down to New Jersey to meet with a company called TerraCycle, which is an innovative recycling company. And so I was already in the process of, you know, building the Post Landfill Action Network, and I was heading down to meet with a company that I was very excited to meet with. And so it was kind of an overwhelming experience. Also, I'd applied for the Brower Youth Award in the past, so I was very excited to have gotten it.
And so you on campus, like I'm sure a lot of people, were shocked by the number of reusable items that students throw away when they move out.
Yeah. So I went to the University of New Hampshire. I graduated in May, and we have 12,000 students. And on the average month, students threw away about 25 tons of trash. In the month of May, they threw away 105 tons. And that
was
furniture, electronics, clothing, dishware, decorations. So at the end of my first year, when I noticed dumpsters overflowing with usable materials, we set out to put a program together to solve that problem. And in doing so, we also tried to build a model for a program that could be spread to campuses across the country.
So these are staggering numbers. We're talking 12,000 students, average month, 25 tons of waste.
Yes.
And then when they move out, 105 tons?
Yeah.
So what was that process like? Did you have to go to administrators or?
Yeah, so the first year of the program was an uphill battle, definitely. We had to work with an incredible amount of administrators all across the board. You know, building a system takes a lot of work to kind of get all the players on board. So the program that we set up was basically that we fundraise, as students, we fundraise money on our own to pay for program expenses in the first year. And we fundraised about $9,000 to pay for rental trucks, storage units over the summer, and other program expenses. And then what we did was we worked with the administration to set up drop-off locations in dorms. We organized students to go around and collect the materials that students threw away. We stored them over the summer, cleaned, sorted, organized them, and then we held a giant sale during move-in weekend, and we sold everything back to students at discount prices. In the first year, we made back enough money to pay for the program the following year, and we'd officially created the first student-led self-sustaining program of its kind in the country.
Wow.
And in the last 3 years, we've diverted over 100 tons of waste from the landfill, and we've raised over $55,000 for future programs on campus. So we've reinvested in not only that program, but also electronic waste recycling, composting, and other programs as well.
Good for you. And I'm sure you're being contacted by students in other universities.
Yeah. So as the program grew and gained momentum and awareness at UNH, we began getting contacted by students all over the place with who had expressed interest in starting a program. So that was how the Post Landfill Action Network was born, is it's a student-led nonprofit cooperative that helps students on college campuses across the country establish these programs We work together to leverage buying power for contracts so that we can get discounts on program expenses like trucks and things like that. And we also work with innovative recycling companies to move into other hard-to-recycle items. So we're looking at developing programs on college campuses for carpet recycling and textiles and electronic waste and other unique items.
And that's Alex Fried, founder of the Post Landfill Action Network, working to help students reduce waste on college campuses. And Chloe Maximin is co-founder of Divest Harvard. Before we talk about your experience at Harvard, do you have any programs like this?
Like what?
To reduce mass waste?
Yeah.
We do have many waste reduction programs. Yes.
Okay, good.
Harvard is actually one of the leading universities in the country for waste reduction. There's 2,100 colleges and universities in the country, so, you know, there's a couple of campuses that are very forward-thinking on this, but most of them are not.
So you co-founded Divest Harvard, Chloe, and you're lobbying to get Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. First off, what was your reaction when you found out you won the Brower Youth Award?
I was very excited and very humbled to win the award. I was visiting one of my friends in Minnesota, and she's also involved with Divest Harvard, so it was exciting to share that moment with her.
And how did you get involved with the group Divest Harvard?
So I first became an activist when I was 12 years old because I really love my home. I grew up in Maine, and that's where my heart and soul live. And I had been always focused on traditional advocacy when I was in high school. But after I graduated high school, I started to work on the Tar Sands Free Northeast campaign because there's a plan to pump tar sands through Maine through an existing pipeline. And one day I went to take pictures of the pipeline, and I was imagining this big thing rolling through Maine's woods and that you would really notice it. But it was the exact opposite, and you could not see the pipeline, and you wouldn't know it was there, even if you tried. And then I learned that this pipeline is 76% owned by Exxon, and I had no idea that the fossil fuel industry had such deep roots in rural Maine. And at that same time, that's when Bill McKibben's article came out in Rolling Stone, suggesting that we launch a national divestment movement to reduce the hegemony of the fossil fuel industry and weaken their influence over our political system. And so when I went back to Harvard that fall, I started Divest Harvard, and we've been going ever since.
And you're only 21 now.
Yes.
Do you come from a political family?
My parents are very socially aware, but they're not activists.
So how did you become an activist at 12?
It was just what I felt I had to do because my home was threatened, and it's an area that I love. And there was a development proposal, and it was completely unsustainable and would have ruined the integrity not only of our community but of our natural resources. And so I got involved.
And that's Chloe Maximin. She's co-founder of Divest Harvard, trying to get Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. Where are you right now in that effort?
We are in our third semester of organizing, and we have gained a lot of student support on campus, and we've just received a letter from our president saying that she won't divest from fossil fuels, which is not surprising, but it's given us a really solid platform on which we can launch our campaign further.
And the Brower Youth Award winners are in town right now doing a lot of different events, and they will be publicly acknowledged on Tuesday, October 22nd at the Norse Theater in San Francisco. It's a very inspiring event, one of my favorites of the year. It's a free event. You can find information about getting a ticket at yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. How has your community been influenced by this new wave of young activists? And if there are young activists in your world that you'd like to talk about, or maybe you're one of them, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So what I love also about the Brower Youth Awards is all of you come to town and you spend about a week almost together doing all kinds of different events. What is it like to meet like-minded people and to learn about what's happening in each other's communities? Jonathan, what's it been like for you?
It's just a great opportunity to meet a lot of other people like this. So when I first came here, you know, like just circling the van and picking everyone up from the airport, just seeing the excitement that I also have just on the faces of all these other recipients it's just a great feeling. You know, like a lot of people don't know about the work we do, and a lot of people aren't as passionate as we are. And just to share, you can feel the vibe just sitting around them and just hearing them speak it's heartwarming.
Well, how have your friends back home responded to the work that you do?
Oh, they're as I was saying, not a lot of people know about it. So it's shocked, and it's an eye-opener for a lot of people. A lot of people in my own community don't realize that they walk down the block, they're in harm, they're in the same situation that everyone else is in, but they don't understand it. So when they see that I'm winning an award for the environmental work that I'm doing, they're starting to realize new things.
And what about you, Ariel? What's it been like for you to meet everyone else?
Well, this is only our first day together, so it's been great so far. Okay. And I'm sure it will continue to be great. It's exciting. You know, I've known about the work of UpRose, and I've known about the Divest Hybrid campaign, so it's cool to meet the people that are, you know, doing that work and are on the ground.
It's always inspiring to meet people who are like-minded, who are just as passionate, who are, you know... I think there's so many problems in the world, and it's absolutely impossible for any one of us to solve those problems individually. You know, for I can't fix everything, so it's really great to know that, you know, I can have my specific focus, but that there are others who are out there like myself, or that there are others out there who are kind of doing their own thing, and that together we're helping to make the world a better place.
Yeah, how do you all decide where to focus? Because you did grow up with the internet, unlike a lot of us, and there's just so much information out there, and a lot of the problems we didn't know about 15, 20 years ago are thrown in our face every day. So how do you decide where to put your efforts?
I mean, I think it's really important to understand. I think it's really important to understand systems. So I think it's, you know, it's really important to really do your best to get a full grasp of all of the problems that are out there, how all the problems are intricately connected. But I also think it's really important to kind of follow your passions and to really find where you best fit. Over the years that I've been involved in activism, I've jumped around from a number of different projects. And, you know, when I was looking to graduate college, I was trying to figure out, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? This project was one of a few that I had been involved in. And I think, you know, it's a process of kind of picking where you best fit and like where your passions most directly lie. But again, I also think that, you know, there's a value in that, like, kind of that butterfly effect of, you know, the work that you're doing as an individual has so many far-reaching aspects to it. So, you know, every time that you hold an event where people show up and you're educating them, they're going out into the world with more information than they currently had, than they had previously had, you know. And so everything that you're doing has that butterfly effect. So I think you can't get bogged down in that there's so many issues to focus on, but more just knowing that everything that you do has an impact.
What are your thoughts on that, Chloe?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, how do you decide where to put your focus? Because there are so many different issues that we're dealing with.
When I look at myself as an activist, I think that I always tended to look at the macro level perspective and see how I can best use my efforts to influence the top of the hierarchy. And right now, my passion is climate change and mitigating climate change, and what we need is climate legislation. But the main force that's blocking any attempt at climate legislation is the fossil fuel industry. And so as a student at an influential university, I'm doing everything I can to ensure that we use our clout to weaken the power of the fossil fuel industry so that our world doesn't teeter on the brink of climate change, but that goes towards a planet that people can live on without worrying that what they love will be taken away by global warming.
And how is Harvard connected to the fossil fuel industry?
Well, one of the board members of Exxon used to be on our board of trustees, and our endowment, which is $32.7 billion, is heavily invested in fossil fuels. And so if Harvard divests from fossil fuels, it sends a very clear moral message that it is unacceptable to be sponsoring climate change and furthering the entrenched power of big fossil fuel corporations.
$32 billion.
Yes. It's a lot of money.
What are your thoughts, Ariel, about a focus and where to put your focus?
Well, I think more and more people are understanding that a lot of the issues that we're seeing in the world all have the same root cause. And, you know, a lot of our current problems come down to an economic system that's fundamentally unjust and that's built to place profits above people. And so I think, you know, we too often, I would say, the progressive movement is organized in terms of issue silos where you're working on your issue and you're not thinking intersectionally. And I think that's, you know, that's something we have to move beyond. And I think that the only way we can do that is by truly focusing on the root causes, you know, of capitalism, of racism, of sexism, that we're seeing. And, you know, we can work on our issues, but we have to have that analysis that drives us to say, you know, we're not just working for, you know, this one bill that's going to help do this one thing, but we're working for justice for everybody. Me working on climate justice is related to people working on migrant justice issues. It's related to people working on reproductive justice issues. And it's all related and needs to be seen as such.
Jonathan?
Yeah, so climate change is a global issue. So how are we supposed to look at our focus points and efforts? So because we're a community-based organization, we have to look at the community, because a lot of that is ignored when something is a global issue. We look at the biggest, the most important in their opinion. So starting from a community level, we listen. We listen to the community. We open our doors to anyone in the community, and we try to turn any thought into action. So we just started the Sunset Park Climate Justice Community Center, which started right after Hurricane Sandy hit us. And a lot of people in my community didn't know what to do during Sandy. We have a lot of non-documented immigrants, and they're living in not-so-legal apartments. And because they don't have the government support that a lot of citizens do have, they don't know what to do. There's also language barriers. So we open our doors to them. We listen to their ideas. We all work together to come to a solution. And that's what we do at UpRose. Our focus point is always listening to the community.
You know, it's amazing to hear you all talk about solutions. I mean, you're actually getting real work done. How are you affected by the political process that's so toxic right now and really pretty ugly? I mean, as young people, when you look at just what we hear from some of these politicians, how does that affect you?
Well, I started doing climate activism, it was right around 2009 when there was a climate bill. And so I was doing a lot of rallying around the climate bill. I was, you know, putting a lot of hopes on President Obama to, you know, save the Copenhagen Accords in 2009. I thought we were going to come to this international treaty on climate change. It was all going to be wonderful. And I realized that that's just not going to happen. You know, our political system is not built to deal with climate change. In fact, it's built to, you know, do climate change. It's what makes climate change happen. And so here, you know, here we are a couple of years later, and I see, you know, for people that were my generation that worked on Barack Obama's campaign that really thought that he was the man, you know, if you understand climate science, how could you not work on it? And we're seeing that he's not. So I think you see a whole bunch of youth my age that are now, you know, re-inspired into doing direct action, into fighting the root causes, and to, you know, refocus their work on a much more local level, like Jonathan was saying, because, you know, that's where real change happens. It happens in our local communities, and it's only local communities being mobilized and fighting that will push a much, much larger national system.
Yeah, and think about that, because I'd like to ask you all the same question. We're going to take a quick break. That is Arielle Klagsbrunn. She's a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, working on a campaign to get the city of St. Louis to end Peabody Energy's political power and influence there. Jonathan Ferrer is a youth justice organizer with UpRose. They work to lessen environmental burdens in Sunset Park neighborhood. He lives in Brooklyn. Alex Fried is founder of the Post Landfill Action Network. They work to help students reduce waste on college campuses. And Chloe Maxman is co-founder of Divest Harvard, working to get Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. And today's guests are in town to receive the David Brower Youth Award from the Earth Island Institute. It's an amazing event. It'll be taking place Tuesday, October 22nd. At the Norse Theater in San Francisco. It's free, and you can find information at yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can give us a call or drop us an email. And this is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in today's conversation, or a question you feel should be answered, get in touch with us by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send your question or comment via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll be joined by McClatchy's Kevin Hall and the Huffington Post's Michael McAuliffe talking about media coverage of the partial government shutdown. Congress reached an 11th-hour deal to end the 16-day partial shutdown. Republicans failed to defund or delay the Affordable Care Act. The president just signed a bill funding the government through the 15th of January and raising the debt limit through February 7th. So how did the media frame this crisis, and who went beyond the Washington narrative? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by four of the Brower Youth Award winners. It's given every year by the Earth Island Institute to recognize environmental change leaders between the ages of 13 and 22. And today we're joined by Jonathan Ferrer, a youth justice organizer with UpRose. They work to lessen environmental burdens in the Sunset Park neighborhood. He lives in Brooklyn. Alex Fried is founder of the Post Landfill Action Network. They work to help students reduce waste on college campuses. Arielle Klagsbrunn is a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, working on a campaign to get the city of St. Louis to end Peabody Energy's political power and influence. And Chloe Maxman is co-founder of Divest Harvard. They're working to get Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, or if you'd like to talk about the power of young people getting involved in this kind of work, what would happen if we heard from these people more often and less of the toxic people that we hear from on a regular basis? If there's a group in your area that works with young people, we'd love to hear from you. Or if there's someone you'd like to recognize in your life, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255, or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I'll get you all to answer that question in just a minute, but I just want to take a couple of callers. Let's hear from Jamie in Santa Cruz. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Rose. I want to congratulate all of you guys.
I was raised
in the Vietnam era, and we took, once it started, we took student activism for granted. So even though everybody wasn't doing it, I couldn't be more supportive of what all of you are doing. I have two quick questions, one for Alex and one for Chloe. Alex, I know, because I spent 10 years there, that the Chico State campus is not doing much with recycling. Do you think it is better for me to contact the student body president or the university? Which champion would you recommend is the most helpful?
Our process for reaching out to students on college campuses has been kind of all across the board. So sometimes there's a sustainability program on campus. Sometimes we've been able to get in touch directly with students. Really, it would just be a matter of finding the students who might be the most passionate in terms of environmental activism on that campus who might be interested in working with us.
Okay,
you can also contact myself as well, and we can try to help.
Right. I'll check the program and contact them. Chloe, I just want to say I'm an alumnus of that place.
That's great.
And I could not be more supportive of what you're doing, and I'd like to know what you want alumni to do. And I want to tell you that we did get them to stop sending money to South Africa, and it is possible to persuade the corporation to do things differently. I realize it's very radical for them to deal with companies like Exxon in a different way, but it is possible. So you keep going with that and tell me what I should do.
Thank you so much. If you go to divestharvard.com, you can sign our alumni resolution, and then one of our alumni organizers will get in touch with you. And if you want to get more involved, then you can just let them know how you'd like to be involved, and we can go from there.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Jamie. And Denise actually has sort of a related question from San Francisco for you, Alex. She says, I would love it if youth take on the issue of condiment packets, such as mustard, ketchup, cheese, and red pepper packets delivered with pizza. Also, those plastic dividers. The yearly production of these packets is estimated to be $16 billion. I would donate charity to anyone who could come up with a solution.
There's so many unique problems out there and solutions to be found. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about with this organization is the fact that waste is fundamentally solvable. We have the technology, we have the infrastructure in place to be able to either design products to be manufactured properly so that they are recyclable at the end of their life value, or the ability to design the proper infrastructure to recycle you know, disposable type products. So one of the things that we're doing with this organization is trying to find those companies that have been on the cutting edge of that innovation and trying to encourage the next generation to be demanding that of, you know, consumers, the market in general, to be coming up with the solutions to those problems. And then students are really in the best position to be kind of implementing those solutions on campuses and educating the next generation around the fact that that's possible.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Denise. Rick wanted me to repeat information about the event. So it's Tuesday, October 22nd at the Norse Theater, 275 Hayes Street. If you go to yourcallradio.org, just click on the link that says tickets to the Brower Youth Awards. And there you can get a free ticket. And if you'd like to go to the reception, that costs money, but it's for a very good cause. And the free awards are from 7:30 to 9 p.m. And again, go to yourcallradio.org, Tuesday, October 22nd at the Norse Theater, 7:30 in Hayes Valley. And thank you for the email. Let's go to our next caller. Let's hear from Van in Pleasanton. Hi, Van.
Hi. I'm wondering why the people who are interested in reducing waste don't get together with the people who are interested in reducing fossil fuels and try to figure out how to convert waste into alternative fuels and use it for generating electrical power. And I'll take my answer off the air.
So,
Alex,
there's a, I mean, as I said in the, at one point that, you know, we're really trying to understand intricate systems and how they all are related. There are definitely some very large concerns with incineration and using trash as a form of energy. Primarily that it's a huge producer of dioxin, which is a very cancer-causing material. But there are definitely solutions out there that could be found, and we are in many ways working with a lot of different environmental activism organizations and trying to portray the waste issue as more than just a waste issue, but as a fundamental issue that really plagues a whole host of environmental problems across the board. Just to kind of like throw that out there, we only have so many resources on the planet. We know that our economic growth has resulted in us extracting resources at an exponential rate that is not sustainable. And one of those problems is the waste issue. And it's one of the many problems, but through extraction and through improper disposal, we are running out of resources, and we need to find ways to work together to solve those problems.
And we're going to have a discussion about this on Wednesday with Alan Weissman. He's out with a new book called Countdown. It's about these very issues, so be sure to tune in for that. And I wanted to ask you all the question I asked earlier, just about how the toxic political process in this country affects all of you. I mean, we've got, you know, very key politicians with a lot of power who are climate change deniers. I mean, they say things like God will take care of it. And I just wonder, when I hear this stuff, how does it affect young people? So, I mean, you're dedicating your life to this issue at such a young age. How does that affect you, Jonathan?
Yeah, so UpRose is a nonprofit organization, and we deal with a lot of, I don't want to say hate, but a lot of ignorance when it comes to the government. I mean, we have to do pretty much whatever we can to get funding just to support our cause. And UpRose, we're trying to network with other organizations, but it's pretty much a universal issue. All nonprofits have to do something to gain money. And looking, we're having the mayoral debates, and looking back and seeing that only a few really took care of bringing up the issue of climate change and environmental, like, local issues is...
In New York.
In New York, yeah. I mean, only a few really brought that up, and those aren't the few that we really want representing our city. So it's really an issue trying to find the right people to represent us.
How, what are your thoughts on getting involved in the political process? Because this was a huge problem during the Occupy movement, where a lot of occupiers did not want to get involved in the system and the political process.
I mean, it's really hard to get involved in that issue. I mean, because you start losing support from the same people that have been following you through this whole path. I mean, some people are actively involved with contacting political representatives in your local area. And what happens a lot is when they start seeing your name next to big political, I don't want to say parties, but when they see your name next to politics, a lot of them get confused and they stop supporting your causes.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan is a youth organizer with UpRose. It stands for United Puerto Rican Organization of Sunset Park. What are your thoughts, Ariel? How do you deal with that?
Well, I live in Missouri. So in Missouri, they tried to pass a law in the state legislature that said that
The state of Missouri does not abide by any UN sustainable development goals, and we should not talk about the word sustainable development. So obviously, the political climate in Missouri is a little different than other places. You know, I think part of it is what can we do on a local level? You know, we see the same problems mirrored on a local level in St. Louis. Our mayor took, you know, over $20,000 from Peabody Coal, the world's largest coal company, in his last reelection cycle. And, you know, Peabody's all over our city. You know, we're working on this local ballot initiative right now that's on a citywide basis that would say, it's called Take Back St. Louis, and it would say that the city can't give any more public money to extraction companies and needs to invest in green jobs creation policies instead. And I'm really excited about it because it is an example to me both of a longstanding direct action, you know, nothing's made Peabody spend more than trying to beat us on this. And it's also, you know, how do we make the political system work for us? So it's going around our elected officials. We collected 36,000 signatures to get this on the ballot in the city because we didn't really have a choice. Obviously, our city politics is really tied to big coal. And I think, you know, I was involved in the Occupy movement. I have a very strong disillusionment with both federal politics and just the political system in general. But I think that there are places where we can use that political system to work for us as normal people. I think what we're doing in St. Louis is an example of that. And then I think just ultimately to change the political climate, you know, we need a bunch of organizing. We need lots of fronts opened against the extraction industry all over. And, you know, we can't just be where they're mining. We have to be where they're mining. We have to be where they're exporting. We have to be where they're financing. And, you know, there's, like Chloe was saying, there's fossil fuel infrastructure all over this country, and we need fronts against it everywhere and to be pushing back then. And, I mean, that's the only thing that's going to build a real movement and change this country.
And that's Arielle Klagsbrunn. She's a community organizer with the group Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. Alex, you wanted to jump in earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think on a more broad, fundamental level, we can all agree that one of the biggest places for us to start would be to address the issue of money and politics and the influence of corporations on the political system. To bring it to some of the work that I've been doing and focusing on, you know, we're doing speaking tours on college campuses, and we're trying to influence not just students to do practical application of waste reduction and implement these programs that they can directly be a part of, that they can feel energized by, that they can raise money with, that they can do other efforts on, but also doing broader education around the whole system of waste, consumerism, economic growth, and how all of those are intricately tied to resource, improper use of resources and whatnot. So I'd say, you know, in terms of politics, one of the areas where that directly connects is how, as a whole, you know, the entire world tends to view growth through GDP. And I think that is definitely one of the things where we really need to, you know, gross domestic product. So, you know, we cannot view economic growth or growth as a society through GDP anymore. It's obvious that we are working within a finite system. We have so many resources. We have so many, we can only have so many people on this planet. And to view any society, whether it's a country or a city or whatever, through GDP as a factor of growth is fundamentally flawed. We can't have an exponential growth with finite resources. We can only utilize so many resources. So, you know, we need to find better ways to factor in social impact, environmental impact. One of the things that GDP doesn't measure is how poor people are in a community. Mm. It doesn't measure the negative externalities of the environmental impact of that growth. So when companies are growing, when they're hiring more people, when they're producing more product, you don't see, you know, the negative externalities of the environmental impact of those companies on the environment in that area or on the people in that area. So, you know, fundamentally, we need to be changing our system in the way that we look at factors of success as a society.
That is Alex Fried, 22, founder of the Post Landfill Action Network. They work to help students reduce waste on campuses. He lives in Durham, New Hampshire. Arielle Klagsbrunn, 22, is a community organizer with Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. Chloe Maxman, 21, I hope you all don't mind me saying your ages, co-founder of Divest Harvard, working to get Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. And Jonathan Ferrer, 17, is a youth organizer with UpRose, working to lessen environmental burdens in the Sunset Park neighborhood. He lives in Brooklyn. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, they're in town to receive the Brower Youth Award from the Earth Island Institute. They'll be publicly acknowledged at a very inspiring event on Tuesday, October 22nd at the Norse Theater in Hayes Valley. The event starts at 7:30 and it's free. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. And, you know, what would it... I just always think about the media in a different way. If we had your voices on a regular basis, talking about the changes that you're actually making in your community, what goes through your mind when you hear these young activists talk about the work that they're doing? And if there's any group in your area that works with young people, or if you want to acknowledge someone... We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. What really inspires you to stay this involved? Do you have personal inspiration?
Well, a personal inspiration of mine, I look at the lack of youth involved in this issue of climate change and environmental justice.
Is there a lack of youth?
There's, I would say, a lack of youth in my own community, okay, based on the amount, the population of youth. I don't know specific numbers, but it's very, very small, like, in comparison to the whole population that are actively involved. Mm. So when I put myself in comparison to everyone else, I just, it pushes me to try harder to try to get everyone actively involved.
What works to get your friends involved?
Something that I was telling all the other recipients yesterday was actually that that was an issue that came up not too long ago. How do we get more youth involved? And the whole Facebook, Twitter, yeah, we can post, but are those kids really going to pay attention to that post, or are they going to keep scrolling? So something that I noticed a lot in Brooklyn is a lot of people like to create music. And there's not a lot of space, like open mics anymore, that allow youth to come in and share their work. So at UpRose, we host something every month called Freedom Friday, where it's an open mic that it's youth led, and anyone is welcome to come and present their music. We have sound equipment, and that was a key thing that started youth involvement. And we also have a summer initiative. It's at the table leadership. And it invites youth in the city to spend the summer at UpRose to learn about environmental justice and work with other people in the city to get people that introduction of environmental justice.
Do you have any success stories of bringing in friends that really didn't know much about this before?
Well, me and my one of my best friends back in Brooklyn, we both joined UpRose from a job fair because it was close to our home. We didn't really know much about what the organization dealt with. So the city... what they do is it's a lottery-based system. They select certain youth that apply to SYEP, Summer Youth Employment Program, and you choose in a job fair where you would like to spend the summer, and the city pays you. So because UpRose is a nonprofit, it's actually a benefit to them because they can take on a bunch of youth to have them work in the whole summer, but the city's paying them. Hmm. And me and my best friend went because we thought it was very, very close to our home. We thought, oh, we can wake up late, we can go home on our lunch break. And we both walked in. The first day, we looked at each other when we heard environmental justice come out of the leaders' mouths, that we thought that this was going to be a horrible summer. But towards the end of the summer, we couldn't wait until the fall semester started because we can actively be a part of it.
How has this experience changed you?
I think it took a complete 180-degree turn on my life.
That's Jonathan Ferrer, youth organizer with UpRose, United Puerto Rican Organization of Sunset Park. What about you, Ariel? Where do you get your inspiration?
That's a great question. I think for me, when I found organizing, it was the only way that I felt like I could have any power in this world. And I've found that when I'm not organizing, I get really overwhelmed by looking at the news. I can't handle it. It's too overwhelming and there's too many scary things. I think organizing is fundamentally the only way that normal people can make any change in this country. And I think that direct action is a really important piece of that. And I can, I personally can feel when I haven't done any direct action recently because I feel really overwhelmed. And I think, I've been really, really inspired over the course of the past 2 years. I'm not very old, but I'm old enough that I've seen, change in the climate movement to being much more direct action focused, and have seen, thousands of people now put their bodies on the line and risk arrest and be willing to throw down really hard against injustices in their backyard And I think that that is something that's growing. You know, this Yale study came out that said 1 in 8 people were willing to commit civil disobedience to stop global warming. And that is just astounding. You know, if we even got half of that or a quarter of that, you know, we would build the movement that we need. And so it's really important to have organizers out there that are asking people to put their bodies on the line and asking people to do things that they obviously want to do and are willing to do. And we have historically been too scared to ask.
What do you think about what Jonathan said about youth not being involved? What do you see in your community in St. Louis, Missouri?
Well, I organize with some youth. I also organize with non-youth, normal people as well. And I think, you know, I think that there's a growing movement of youth. You know, this weekend is Power Shift in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There's probably 10,000 students and young people that are converging, that are concerned about climate issues, and that's really astounding to me. I think, you know, I come out of this with a youth perspective that, you know, I'm going to have to inherit all these things, so we better fight to change it, because, you know, my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation, you know, they're not going to have to feel the worst of it than we are. So I think when that feeling, or when you can instill in youth that they actually do have power, I think that's the most important part.
Alex, what about you? Where do you get your inspiration?
Yeah, I'm going to follow off what Ariel said. It's very accurate. You know, there's that quote, I always wondered why somebody wasn't doing something about that until I realized I am somebody. You know, it's really important to show young people that they have power, that they have the ability to affect things, to influence change. And really just to kind of encourage people to follow their passions. I think we've seen over and over and over again that it's some of the, you know, some of the best ideas and the brightest minds are coming out of the youngest generation, and you know, the problems of this world will be solved by the youngest generation. So we really need to kind of incubate and encourage people to be following those passions and finding their way to change. And then, you know, when things get tough, really, for me, it's the thing that keeps me going is the butterfly effect idea. Just that idea that we can influence things even on a very micro level by just being out there.
Well, because you have so many connections to college campuses, I mean, what aren't we hearing about activism on college campuses? How healthy is it right now?
It's out there. It just needs to be more supported. So a lot, you know, there are some campuses that are fantastic. Harvard, some of the bigger campuses are really just moving in incredible at an incredible pace. There are other campuses where I go and meet with students where they've never heard of Power Shift, and they're a couple of, you know, towns away from it. Like, we, you know, there are some campuses that are very isolated, and I think it's the power of, you know, partially the networks that I'm looking to build, as well as other ways to support, you know, awards and things like that, you know, building the awareness and building the movement so that we can all network together. We live in this very networked world, so we really need to find ways to get people to be involved.
Yeah, actually, Jonathan, what you said about Twitter and Facebook was interesting, because we often assume that because so many young people use it, it actually works. Does it work?
I think it works.
Yeah?
I mean, we've, you know, a lot of the biggest movements were fundamentally powerful because of social networks in the recent years.
And Chloe, what about you? What inspires you?
So when Divest Harvard started last fall, we had 10 people at our first meeting, and none of us had ever been involved with starting a campaign so big. And we were all sitting there, and we were trying to figure out what to do and how to do it. And over the past year, we've grown from 10 people to over 5,000 students at all of Harvard's universities, students, faculty, staff, and alumni who are calling on Harvard to divest. And the people involved with our group it's now a core group of 30 people, and some of them never considered themselves to be activists before divestment. Mm. And so to walk into our meetings twice a week and to see how these people are inspired and willing to commit so much time to divestment, that's what inspires me.
That's great. Yeah. And we have about 3 minutes left. Power Shift. I didn't even know this was happening this weekend. I mean, these things don't get the media attention they deserve. What else do you want people to know about what's going on right now with youth activism?
I think it's important for people to know that there's stuff happening everywhere. Everywhere in the country, there's campaigns starting. There's people, you know, last weekend I was helping do a direct action training in Southern Illinois for people that are ready to fight fracking. And the next weekend, there's a training in Columbia, Missouri for people looking to fight the Flanagan South Pipeline. And that there's stuff going on everywhere. And I would really encourage people to hook up with those local campaigns and get involved with them. And there's obviously been a lot of stuff going on with the Keystone XL pipeline. And I think, you know, as that campaign is coming to a close, it's really important that people are engaging in the local work around them, because we need to open up those fronts everywhere. And that's the only way we can beat the whole fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking with one of the other award winners, Amita, yesterday, about how she had gone to a training through the Sierra Student Coalition that I'd never heard of before. And, you know, there's always things out there that you've never heard of or that you've never known about. So do the research, you know, find the right people, find mentors, find people who can help connect you with other areas. You know, any one of us can be can help with connect. I mean, my email address is alex@postlandfill.org. Like, email me. I can help connect you. Others of us can help connect with people. You know, it's a matter of just building those relationships.
Mm-hmm. I would also say that the climate movement, especially centered around youth, has never been stronger.
Yeah.
And that, like Ariel said, there are so many opportunities to get involved, and it's just getting started.
And Jonathan,
yeah, I'd just like to reiterate what Ariel said before, is that our generation is going to be most impacted by all of these burdens. So this is the best time to step up and start doing anything before it's too late.
And I just want to ask you, because you're the youngest one, 17.
Well, I just turned 18.
Okay,
so.
18. Happy birthday. What's next for you?
College. Start looking into applying to college. I'd like to probably major in computer science and use something to try to...
And stay involved with environmental activism?
Of course, I'm going to stay involved in my organization.
Jonathan Ferrer is a youth justice organizer with UPROSE, United Puerto Rican Organization of Sunset Park. They're working to lessen environmental burdens there. He lives in Brooklyn, just turned 18. Alex Freed, 22, is founder of the Post Landfill Action Network, working to help students reduce waste on college campuses. He lives in Durham, New Hampshire. Ariel Klagsbrunn is a community organizer with Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, taking on Peabody Energy. And Chloe Maxman is co-founder of Divest Harvard, working to get that school to divest from fossil fuels. And they'll be publicly acknowledged Tuesday, 7:30 p.m., October 22nd at the Norse Theater. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you all so much for joining
us.
Thank you.
And congratulations. Thank you. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Congress reached an 11th-hour deal to end the 16-day partial government shutdown, and Republicans failed to defund or delay Obamacare. The president signed a bill funding the government through January 15th and raising the debt limit through February 7th. So how did the media frame this crisis, and who went beyond the Washington narrative? We'll be joined by McClatchy's Kevin Hall and the Huffington Post's Michael McAuliffe. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.